Although it was not foolproof, the voluntary principles would shield ExxonMobil from human rights cases like Doe in the future by helping the corporation to argue to a jury or judge that it had taken all the steps it reasonably could to protect civilians in its areas of operations. This might be self-interested, but the compact had been constructed to appeal to such corporate instincts. The practical effect would be to bring ExxonMobil more closely into line with the corporate responsibility practices of other large multinationals, to socialize Exxon in an era of global norms influenced by civil society. This was the emerging pattern of the Tillerson era. ExxonMobil's new regime learned its lessons late, never admitted the corporation had been wrong in the past, but it shuffled nonetheless in new policy directions, seeking a sustainable form of corporate normalcy and even legitimacy. All that remained now was to dispose of the potential legal liabilities from the past. Bearing the Doe litigation by delay, it seemed to Terry Collingsworth and his colleagues, was a core element of ExxonMobil's strategy. Collingsworth had brought on Agnieszka Frischmann as a co-counsel to handle courtroom arguments and litigation strategy for the John and Jane Doe plaintiffs. She was a Brown University and Georgetown law graduate who specialized in human rights, antitrust, and class action cases on behalf of small businesses, women, and abuse victims. After September 11, she had provided pro bono representation to families of victims of the attacks, as well as detainees at Guantanamo. She was accustomed to well-funded corporate opponents, but she found the ExxonMobil legal team at Willkie Farr, led by Weinstein, to be aggressive beyond the norm. "They wanted to grind us into the dust. It was scorched earth," she said later. "They have way more resources, and they use them. They file motions to reconsider, and they file simultaneously in all possible courts. They know we're just two people." The paper blizzard from Willkie Farr veered so far out of control that at one point a magistrate working with Judge Oberdorfer ordered all lawyers in the case to sign an affidavit affirming that they had read Rule 12, the principal guidelines on federal legal procedure, which prohibited the gratuitous use of filings to harass an opponent, before they could file another motion. Because of ExxonMobil's appeals, the Doe case wound its way toward the United States Supreme Court. ExxonMobil retained the prominent Supreme Court advocate Walter Dellinger and the well-known white-collar defense lawyer Theodore V. Wells, Jr. to represent the oil corporation. The Supreme Court asked the Bush administration for an opinion about whether it should take on the appeal. The issue fell to the administration's Solicitor General, Paul Clement. His office invited the two sets of lawyers to separate informal meetings at the Justice Department. Collingsworth had by now moved into a new private firm. One of his partners, Bill Scheer, was a Florida Republican who had helped President Bush during the 2000 vote recount. Scheer believed in the human rights agenda behind the Aceh case and sought out a meeting at the White House to put in a word for his partner's cause. He met in Washington with one of Karl Rove's successors on the political side of the West Wing. His White House interlocutor heard him out and then told him, straightforwardly, "That's up to Dick Cheney." In a reception area at the Solicitor General's office at the Justice Department on Pennsylvania Avenue, Agnieszka Frischmann and her team waited for their session with Clement. The intimidating figures of Dellinger and Wells emerged. They had gone first and had just completed their presentations on ExxonMobil's behalf. "They are grinning, laughing," one of the participants recalled. "They think their meeting has gone really well. They're high-fiving each other, popping champagne bottles. Not literally, but you can tell they're going out to celebrate." Frischmann's team found their meeting to be a tough grind. They were interrogated about their anonymous clients, particularly about whether there was really enough evidence to withstand scrutiny if the case went forward. The human rights lawyers were impressed by the quality of the government interrogators, but they had no confidence about how the decision would come out. They went out afterward and knocked back shots, trying to keep their spirits up. They soon had reason to be joyous. Clement decided against ExxonMobil and told the Supreme Court that there was not enough at stake in American foreign policy to justify extraordinary action by the High Court. Time had changed the Bush administration's thinking about the balance of American interests in Indonesia. During the long delays in the case, not only had the Aceh War been settled, but Indonesia had evolved toward stable democratic politics and was enjoying rapid economic growth. The country could now afford scrutiny of its past human rights problems. Such a trial might even strengthen its democracy. Judge Oberdorfer suffered a stroke shortly after Clement's decision. He prepared to retire. As he recovered from his illness, he composed an opinion ordering the Doe case to trial, one of the last written decisions of his career. He came out on the side of the Does. "Plaintiffs have provided sufficient evidence at this stage for their allegations of serious abuse," the judge concluded. ExxonMobil appealed again. Its lawyers had outlasted Oberdorfer. A new judge might see the issues differently. In Aceh, among the original 11 Does, two more of the plaintiffs died as the appeals went on, leaving widows and estates to pursue their claims.